Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Mike Graham. How you doing, man?
Great, man. How are you?
I'm good, mate. That sounds like you've had a nice morning, bit of family time, bit of work, sounds like a good combination to me.
Yep, we've been going since 6. Took the daughter to pancakes for this morning, so we're ready to roll.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny with all the different time zones. So I only recruit in the, I do a little bit outside, but only really recruit in the US, but I'm in Dubai at the minute. So this morning when I woke up, I was on the phone to a candidate in Texas who's at final interview with us. So it was like 9 in the morning for me, but it was like late in the evening for him. I still can't quite get my head around it. So I'm 6 in the evening now and you're on your morning. So we're not too far apart, but yeah, I'm closer to my weekend, but I'm also closer to my Monday morning, Mike. So cool. But yeah, Mike, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro for the listeners that don't know you. So very strong coaching background in and around football, which will be good to get into. I'm sure there's learnings there about developing people and progressing people that can relate to careers. And then moved on to be a senior technical recruiter at Anchor Point Technologies. You were there for around 4 years.
That's right.
And you are currently at Ryan Consulting Group, been there for over 5 years, and you're a technical recruiter there. Ryan, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be on with you.
Yeah, no, likewise. Listen, I'm looking forward to getting into it. Whenever I have another recruiter on, and we've had a few recruiters on now, I think current market conditions, a lot going on, layoffs, some people are hiring, some people aren't, some people are doing great, some people aren't, AI. I think there's a lot of people out there are like, what should I do? What are you seeing? What's going on? What's the best thing to do to future-proof myself for the next 6, 12, 18 months? So I feel like more now than ever, there's a lot of guys and girls out there that are interested to hear to recruit is chatting away. But I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but I'll start where I always start, Mike, which is, who are you, mate? What do you get up to? And what's a day in the life like of Mike at the minute?
First of all, thanks for having me on. I'm thrilled to do this with you. This is my first podcast, anyway. I listen to a lot of them that's usually sports related, but this is the first one where someone wanted me to be on one. As far as recruiting is concerned, I go back about 9-10 years ago. I was a teacher and I was done with teaching. And I had one of those kind of epiphany moments. I'm sitting in my classroom, all the students had left, and I just look around the room and I go, I don't want to do this anymore. I just knew it deep down in my bones. Like, I do not want to spend the next 25 years of my life doing this job. I had this tough come to Jesus kind of moment. And so I reach out to a friend who, she had also been a teacher and gotten out. And she was now in, she described as consulting. I reach out to her and I go, this is where I'm at. I'm just looking for ideas. And family members sent my resume around to people they knew and financial stuff that never came about. My dad was an accountant. He tried to point me in certain directions that didn't pan out. Mortgage guy who we knew interviewed me, but it wasn't going to go anywhere. And then she suggested, have you ever thought about recruiting? And I said, is that like headhunting or sales? I don't know if I want to do that. And she had the same kind of conversation with me that 9 years later, this is what I have with everybody now. You're trying to figure out what's going to drive that person. What do you really want? And what I really wanted was, I want to get compensated for hustling, for putting more time and more effort. Because as a teacher, and I don't know what it's like in the UK to be a teacher, but in the United States, as long as you keep going, you make a little bit more money every year based on seniority. You don't necessarily get it because you get better. And if you do a kick-ass job, you don't see more money for that. It's not like there's bonuses and commissions and stuff. And I guess I'm entrepreneurial in that sense. I'm motivated in that way. And so she points me in the direction of Anchor Point. She'd worked there for a short time, had a good relationship with the owner. And my first child is going to be born in 7 or 8 months at that point. I'm going to be a dad. I'm married. I got responsibilities. Let's get to it. And so Julie Kennedy at Anchor Point Technology Resources gave me an opportunity with no IT experience at all. And the guy who hired me is a British guy from the UK, just outside of Manchester. His name's Chris Cash. Great bloke. He has 3 daughters. I was going to have my oldest is a girl. I think he just saw a little of himself in me. And so he gave me a shot. And it was strictly engineering recruiting. So I was learning about civil engineering, just different kinds of engineering. He was an engineer. That's where he went to school for in the UK. So we did that for a couple months. He left for a sales opportunity at another company, and then I went straight to IT, and that's what I've done ever since. And I'd like to think that I'm good at adapting and adjusting. That's what I'm good at. And the other part of the job that I really love most is I like to think that I'm an investigator or a detective. I love Scooby-Doo as a little kid. I love psychological thriller movies. I love figuring out whodunit. Getting a new wreck or getting a new position and then figure out who fits it is a fun chase.
Yeah.
So that's what I got into. And the first year or two were hard because I really didn't know anything, but learned some valuable lessons about the importance of just getting on the phone and starting to talk to people. You don't need to know what you're doing. It's okay to mess it up. And I learn best when I get my hands on something, mess it up, and then put it back together. And then I figure out what not to do. And that's really valuable. And I think that's whether it's recruiting or anything else, learning what not to do is just as important as learning what to do. And not long after struggling, I had my best year in 2018, led the company in gross margin, made President's Club, got a trip to Mexico, all that stuff. And then by the next year, I think I'd grown as far as I was going to there, and then got the opportunity at Ryan and been at Ryan ever since. And here I've had a chance to be very autonomous, which is nice.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, brilliant. First of all, mate, great British accent, by the way. That was almost perfect, mate. I'm very impressed.
I'm not going to overdo it. I don't want to be disrespectful, but I had to at least do it once because sitting next to him in the bullpen, hearing him on the phone, I developed the cadence for a British accent, so I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, no, I can tell, mate. I can tell. It's good. There's loads to get into there. There's loads that's relatable to lots of different types of careers and stuff like that. You mentioned one thing you're good at is being adaptable, being able to adapt and being able to adjust. And I think for you, Mike, for me, for everyone listening, I think that skill set is going to be absolutely paramount, like over the next 4, 5, 6 years. I think we're going to see a lot of change. I think there's going to be a lot happening. And I think people that can adapt and adjust, I think are going to do really well. Is there any reason that you're good at that, or is it just something you've always been good at? Or
I've thought about that, and I'm the youngest of three. I have two older sisters. And I think when you're the youngest, the world is happening around you, but you don't have a lot of control over it because everyone else is telling you what to do. Mm. And so you have to learn to look around and figure out what's next, what's going on, and then adapt and adjust to it. Whereas my wife was the oldest. She was the oldest of a couple girls. And so she's used to looking after people and telling others what to do. So she has that kind of the opposite skill set. You see this with development a lot. You see this in cyber a lot. There are people who are really good at establishing a routine, establishing a discipline, a pace. They are really good when they can set the pace and set the schedule, and they do this, and then they do this, and this. Mm. I can't be that guy. That's not my strength. I'm more of, okay, today's a little different from yesterday. This is what's important today. That's not going to be the same. And especially as a recruiter, it's never the same thing every day. The same thing is not important every day. You got to adjust really quickly. In the agile world, the software world, oh my God, if you're not ready to pivot fast, you're going to get left behind. So I think it's, like you said, it's being able to adapt and adjust but I just think that's my personality.
Yeah, it's interesting though. So yeah, so it's probably been etched in your mind or embedded in your mind from a very young age because of the way things were within your family, which would make sense. I was reading a book once that was saying like between the ages of born and seven years old, apparently so much of the way our mindset is and the way we are and the stuff like that, apparently it's pretty much all set before the age of seven. So that would make a lot of sense, mate.
And having young kids, it sounds like you have until about 4 or 5 to really get them to be good human beings. And then after that, it's you're either just rolling with it or you're fighting against the stuff that you didn't fix earlier. So it's like, okay, that's good to know when they're 5. I wish I would have known that when they were born. But yeah, I totally agree with that.
Cool. Yeah, no, cool. And I think as well, just on your point about when you were a teacher, and it is the same in the UK, by the way, it doesn't really matter how hard you work as a teacher, you're getting a similar sort of paycheck and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think as well, it's like, I know people in cybersecurity, obviously everyone has problems in their career and there's always obstacles to overcome and stuff like that. But I would say one problem that the people in security don't have is they don't often look around and say, I don't want to be here anymore. Like everyone, you know, is either trying to break in or trying to progress or trying to find a new role or looking at a new chapter. So there's problems, but people are never bored in and around security. I'm not bored in recruitment. It doesn't sound like you are either, Mike. So it's probably, when you said that, I thought, do you know what? Like, we are actually all quite lucky, because to get up in the morning and actually love what you do and know that you've actually found a career path that you want to stick with either forever or for a substantial length of time, I think that's quite a privileged position to be in, because some people get up in the morning and they don't know what they want to do, or they hate the path that they've chosen or the industry they've chosen, or whether it's recruitment or cybersecurity. So, yeah, we're probably quite lucky in that respect, Mike. It's nice to found something that you're good at and you're into, isn't it?
It is. I got to say this, though. If I had to choose my profession, coaching American football for a living, if I could make enough money out of it, would be my chosen profession. That's what I love to do. Recruiting is something I found that I'm good at, and I can make a good living doing that and support a family doing that. Do you know a guy named Scott Galloway here in the United States?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly.
I like to listen to him. I don't think we agree politically very much, but I think he's a really bright guy when it comes to, he gives advice to like college graduates and young 20-somethings a lot. He says, don't, you know, the whole idea of going after your passion, that sounds great, but you got, if you're going to make any money, you got to get good at something. You got to have a tangible skill that really is going to be in demand in the marketplace. And you go back to the idea, and my dad was pretty good about teaching me this, is that if you have a skill set that's in demand and preferably not many other people are good at it, you're going to make as much money as you want, right? So if you don't have skills that are in demand and it doesn't stand out in the marketplace, you're one of a lot and it's not real valuable. And that's tough sledding. So hopefully, and I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface with cyber yet. There is so much more to be discovered. And as companies start to appreciate its impact on their business more, and of course, with all of us being like, I'm seeing so many more roles come out or needs that deal with vulnerability management and protecting their networks and protecting their data. And that's, that demand is only going to grow exponentially. And my last thought there is, I had, speaking of coaching, one of my players a couple years ago, he was a senior in high school, so he was thinking about college. And his dad has been in IT. He's an account executive with, I think it's been with Hewlett Packard for a long time. But he's ultimately in IT. And he was deciding, do I want to major in some kind of physical therapy or cybersecurity? And I told him, go into cyber. You'll finish college and you'll have untold opportunity at 23 years old. You'll make more money than I'm making at 25. And so that's what he's majoring in. That I, if anybody's thinking about converting to cyber, or they're in it, or they're not sure about the future, your future's bright. Just keep learning new skills, and who knows what might be there in 5 years.
Yeah, I think so, Mark. I'm of the same thought. But by the way, Scott Galloway's mega. Like, I've listened to him loads. He was on a guy called Steve Bartlett. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's got the... Yeah, he was on Steve Bartlett's podcast recently, and he does a lot of advice. I think his kind of niche or niche is actually advising young men, isn't it? Like helping out. And I listen to him a lot, and he gives a lot of good financial advice and stuff like that. And you're right, says it how it is. He's not one of these guys that just comes on there and like Mr. Positive. He's like you said. Yeah, he's real. He's real.
Yeah. And I think people really want that. I think they've been told to follow your dreams and find, no, I'm not going to BS you. This is what's real. And I think I wouldn't call it an epidemic, but it's clear that we have the young men in the United States are having problems connecting with the opposite sex, moving into the job world, things like that. I've been reading about that. I have a son. So this is stuff that I'm thinking about now. Yeah. And I think that direct, blunt, but honest, I think people really appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, mate. Yeah, no, he talks some good stuff. I used to listen to another show that he did with a woman, Kara Swisher or something.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he used to co-host another show with her, which was also pretty good. But yeah, cool. On the coaching American football, I'm imagining there's a lot of stuff there that made a great footballer that could probably be transferable into doing well in security, or doing well in any career for that matter, in terms of career growth and career progression. Is there any kind of insights you can give us when it comes to your coaching that could relate to people optimizing their career progression or growth?
The best advice I ever got before I got into coaching, my college coach gave me a great piece of advice. He said, and I'm going to translate this a little bit from football terms to more practical everyday terms for everybody. And he said, you can never watch enough video, meaning game film. You can never go to enough clinics, which is what coaches do in the off season to get smarter. And you can never get smart enough, is his point. You can never stop learning. You always have to keep learning. And my high school coach talked about that too. You have to be a lifelong learner if you're going to be a good coach. So I would say to anybody, whether you're in IT or not, or you're in cybersecurity, whatever you're in, you have to keep learning. There's all kinds of new stuff out there and things change. And if you are said, if you're stuck, or you just, I've learned a lot. I've been recruiting for 9 years, for example. I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of how to do my job, but then now we have AI is taking over our world, and ChatGPT and stuff like that. And so I can't get stuck in that. I've got to keep learning too. So I just think you never stop learning, and you're always looking for ways to add tools to the toolbox, improving your skill level, adding certifications. That just adds zeros and numbers to your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You just say, I'm good. I've got enough information, enough knowledge. And that's pretty much where you're going to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And it's a great attitude to have, Mike, because it takes a certain amount of humility to be like that, and a certain kind of like drop in the ego. But I think having that attitude, if you've got that type of attitude, the stuff we're talking about, being able to adjust, being able to adapt, if you're forever a student and you're prepared to take courses, prepared to take certifications, prepared to always learn more, if you're doing all these things and you're trying hard, I almost think it's impossible not to do well. If you really have this type of attitude, it really does. Yeah, it really does. I remember I've mentioned this before on the pod, but I did this recruitment like accelerator course, and it really was a case of dropping the ego, because a bit like yourself, it's very easy to say, do you know what, I've been doing this for ages, I know what I'm doing, I don't need anyone, and it's the worst thing you can do. But I went on this course and they literally stripped back everything I was doing. It was like you couldn't go in there with an ego. They were very straight talking, no faffing around, and at the time I was feeling a bit uncomfortable, but it really did help. Looking back now, that was like 2 years ago, and it really did help. So I think, yeah, to your point, like for people listening, like no one ever knows it all. The best people in the world, whether it's in sport, whether it's in business, have a coach and are really coachable. So that kind of says it all, the fact that the best people in the world have still got coaches.
And picking up on that, what would you say the biggest takeaway 2 years ago, what you learned, and what are you still utilizing it now?
Yeah, I would say the biggest takeaway was just, you know, it was around recruitment. So just looking at new ways to do things. I grew up in an agency era where it was very much kind of 200 dials a day. And I thought the only way to win business was by smashing the phone, and used to annoy everyone. And I thought that was part of it. I thought I've got to annoy some people to get what I want. And then they showed me different ways to form relationships, the podcast being one of them, which we started 2 years ago. We've done an episode every week for 2 years. That was a massive learning. Video outreach was another one. So they really just showed me different ways to meet people, build relationships, enhance my network. So I would say the biggest learning in that was, again, probably just being shut off. I'd used the phone for years and it had worked. So probably could have easily gone.
My preference is always to be on the phone.
For me, the phone's still massively important. I've probably just moved it a little bit further down the funnel. Like I used to start off with it cold and go straight in with it, whereas now it'll be maybe some interaction on LinkedIn or maybe some of it, and then the phone will come in. So I've probably just moved it a bit, not removed it, just moved it down the funnel. But yeah, that's probably my biggest takeaway. Is just new ways of doing things, Mike.
Just finding new ways to do your job, finding better ways to do your job. And just if you think of it in terms of when you first learn to do the job, it's like learning how to fish. I cast and I catch one fish. And then you learn, man, I can catch a hell of a lot more of these if I cast a bigger net. And so I think that's what you're describing. I can hit the phones and I can send messages out, but man, I can now reach 10, 20 times as many people doing something like this as opposed to what I was doing before. So just, and I think it's the same way with recruiting. You have a certain understanding of the job rec requires this skill and this skill, and I'm looking for those things in bullet points on resume. And then you start learning, all right, that company does that, or that company does that, or when someone's been doing that job in that industry for 5 years, they're getting tired of it, so that's someone who's going to want to talk to me. You just start figuring out, a much bigger picture and how everything fits.
Yeah, you do. Do you know what you said before about when you get a new search and you're working out who's the best fit? Like, it, I love our legacy clients and our existing clients because they keep the lights on and they pay the bills every month, and that's great. But there's nothing better than getting a new search. It's a feeling. It's a nice feeling. Yeah, you just, I don't know. You just, yeah, it's, yeah, it just, I think it just revitalizes you and re-energizes you again, doesn't it?
It's a new hunt.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's a new kill because that's really bad, but it's a new client. You discovered a new territory. It's the same winning the first game and a new job. There's like, when you get a new client, new job, and you feel something new, that is exciting, man. That is a nice accomplishment.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It definitely is. I've been interested to get your take on the market now, Mike. I agree with you, by the way. I think security, wherever tech goes, wherever AI goes, I think security has to go with it. Cybersecurity has to go with it. So if you're getting good within security, you're always going to stand yourself in good stead and do well. There's still plenty of hiring going on out there. So I think sometimes people don't think there is, but there is. I look on LinkedIn and everyone's getting laid off, but then I'm on the phone and we're taking job orders and people are hiring. So it isn't all doom and gloom out there, despite what maybe LinkedIn would like us to feel. But
yeah,
just think the market's changed. Like, I know at one point as a recruiter, like in 2022, I was selling access to candidates. Like, no one could access anyone because the market was so hot. Whereas now I feel like we're maybe a certain type of skill set, or kind of someone who's got the technical skills and the communication skills, more of a well-rounded skill set. But it'd be nice to, for the listeners, Mike, what are you seeing out there? Any areas that are in hot demand? I know you mentioned vulnerability management and stuff like that. Is there anything you're seeing out there that could help people?
At the moment, again, it's January. The first quarter of the year is always going to be hot. Definitely in IT, at the end of the year, from Thanksgiving until New Year's, it's going to be quiet because everyone's budgets have been utilized. There's always usually a good ramp-up time for recruiters. When I usually do great in September and early October because companies are like, all right, we got budget, let's use it. And so they get you a rec, boom, get somebody, and you can get them in fast because they don't have time to dick around. They've got to get somebody in and utilize that budget, or they don't get it next year. And so it gets quiet until the new year. And then here, a couple weeks into it, now they know what their budget is. They know what's, and I think last year being an election year really complicated that, especially in my world, in the federal world. I think until they knew who the president was going to be and what administration was going to take over and what their priorities were, it was going to be, it was hard. Last year was a hard, it was my hardest year of my career with some of the clients we had. And I think that had to have been a part of it. But as far as demand goes, let's deal with the elephant in the room. AI. I'm learning about it. Like, I'm by no means am I an expert. I would say I am a novice. I feel the same way about it as I did in IT in 2016 when I was starting this job. So there's a lot to learn, which means there's a hell of a lot of opportunity that goes with it if you are willing to learn and get smarter at it. I would just, here's a good thing for everyone to think about or try. Look at your job right now and you think of your skill set right now. Could my job be, or my skill set be automated at some point in the next 5 or 10 years? Could technology take over my job? And as a recruiter, to me, there's a people part of the business that no software can ever replace. How you make a client feel, the ability to talk to somebody and talk them through a huge decision in their life, software cannot do that. So I would say no, my skill set is probably going to be in demand for as long as I want to do it. But some parts of my job will probably get automated. So I better start having skills that can't be replaced or taken out by the robots, right, that are going to take over the world. So I think everybody should take a hard look at what you do and go, am I going to be obsolete in 10 years? Or am I going to be obsolete in 5 years? Which is, again, that's a hard question to ask. That's a tough one to ask yourself, but I think it's a good little exercise, and then go, okay, what do I really like doing? Or maybe more importantly, what am I good at? And so one thing I've noticed when I talk to people who are in cyber kind of stuff, cyber information security tends to be either kind of an aggressive attacking posture, or it's a defensive, or you're protecting. I'd have to ask people, and this is how I feel about myself. I'm a protector. I'm not going to go out and be crazy and start fights. But man, if you come after my kids, I'm going to attack them. I'm going to be a papa bear. I would be better at a defensive posture. I'm a protector. If you're an aggressive mindset and you're going after stuff, then maybe you would be a red team person. Maybe you would pen test. Maybe you would that would someone you would be. But if you like the idea of being a company's network and data protector, wow. There are malicious actors out there, whether they're in China or wherever, and they're going to use, I was watching a Bill Maher show, and he talks about how, that's not Bitcoin, but like crypto is the scary, dark money world now. And that's where the malicious actors go and get, when they attack somebody's data, that's where they get compensated for, stuff like that. And there's going to be more bad actors as they figure out more ways to break into people's and companies' data, the more need for you to defend it and protect it. But as in terms of the marketplace, I think it's early enough where I'm certainly seeing it. I've been more in the infrastructure world for the last 4 or 5 years, but I think there's never going to be a shortage or need for good development. If you're a good business analyst, you can talk to technical people, you can talk to non-technical people. That's never going to go out of style. But what you develop might change. If you're like a great Java developer 4 or 5 years ago could make as much money as they want. Now it's moved into Python or it's moved into other languages, especially if you're in InfoSec or cyber world, knowing Python or knowing how to automate script stuff is that's a valuable skill because everything is going to get automated because that's cheaper. So yeah, that's my take on what I'm seeing. But I'm, to be fair, I'm stuck in kind of the federal government DOD world more than anything else.
Yeah, no, it's cool, Mike. People always say to me, what you're seeing, is it busy, is it quiet? But we're such a small agency, it's so easy for us to get busy. So sometimes people can ring me and go, God, listen, it's absolutely red hot. But it might not actually be that hot, but because we're small, it's easy to get busy. But yeah, I think listening to you speak there, I've got this theory that like the communication piece is going to go up and up in value. It's like what you're saying about being a recruiter. There will be certain tasks of our job now. Like I've got this vision that we just come in, get up in the morning, Mike, and we just come in and all we have to do is talk. Like all we have to do is do what we're doing now, which is actually recruit and influence. And if the opportunity is right for someone, make sure they're all fully aware that it is. And that's where all the value is in being a recruiter. So I can imagine this world where that's like heavily optimized, where instead of us having to work really long hours to maybe have, I don't know, 8 or 9 really good conversations, we can probably just breeze in and maybe have 15 or 20 because everything around what we do is automated. And it makes me think about a security professional or a developer, or I just think that communication piece, I think, is just going to go up and up and up, because I do think more of the repetitive tasks or a lot of things. I think if we look at a 10-year time horizon, I think so much of that will be able to be done by AI. But the communication piece, or explaining a finding, or explaining why SQLI should be fixed or a vulnerability should be fixed, yeah. Like I think that skill set, I think that will just be up and up in value.
Yeah, totally agree. Whether it's verbal communication or written, the ability to communicate, the ability to explain, the ability to understand, that will never go out of style. That will never be out of demand.
Yeah, no, I agree, mate. I agree. Your role you had before, was that agency side where you were at your previous role?
Yeah, at Anchor Point, that was what I would call kind of agency recruiting, where a lot of competition, fast turnover. You got to find someone in 24 hours. You got to find two people in 48. And there's let's go, and it turns over really fast. So that was good because the stuff I do now is much slower. So it's much better to go and have to go fast. And to me, agency recruiting as a recruiter, IT recruiter, is kind of like dog years, because the volume of your job is so fast, you really feel like you've aged 2 years in 1 year. Sometimes it feels like that. And so the good thing is you get better at your job faster because you have to do it more.
Whereas
if you had a slower pace, it would take you longer to learn. So there's good and bad to that. But it was totally agency recruiting. We were a small regional firm. We were mostly in Indianapolis, where I'm at, and then in Ohio. Couple cities in Ohio, and most of the recruiting was in Indianapolis. There's a handful of companies who did a lot of IT contracting, and so you were one of maybe 15 vendors. And classic example of, if you're the run of the litter, you get the last, you're the last mouth of the bowl. So if a bigger company like in Indianapolis, for example, in terms of agency, there's Tech Systems, there's Pinnacle Partners, Brooksource, there's a lot of big names that are all over the country. And usually if you're bigger, you have more network, you have more ties with hiring managers, so you get the information sooner. But if you're smaller, kind of like we were, boy, if you didn't find someone good in a couple hours or a day, you're going to have to get lucky a couple days later. But yeah, that was definitely that environment.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. So this is when you were sat next to Chris as well, the British guy.
Yes, early on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. So he was like a good, because I do think mentors are important and stuff like that. And yeah, I think they're a big part of career growth. So Chris got you rocking and rolling as a mentor.
I'll tell you, he did something with me. And again, we're veteran older recruiters, right? And so we learned how to smile and dial, how important it was to get on the phone. And he did something really valuable. He challenged me one day. He said, "You're not going to open your computer once. Okay. We're going to do one search on," I don't know if it was Monster or something, but we pulled off, we did a search, and I think I got 60 resumes. And he said, "By the end of the day, try to have called every one of these people and don't do anything else." And you just start developing a cadence of how you talk to people. And I think it's important that when you do connect someone on the phone, you have about 20 seconds. To get to the point. And if you don't get to the point, people go, "I got 18 other million things to do instead of talking to you." So they're going to hang up. So you better get to your point. Why? "I have a job opportunity for you. I have something. Do you have time?" And most people will have a couple minutes. As busy as we all are, everybody has a couple minutes. And yes, the first couple of phone calls, I was a moron. I was fumbling through words and not sure what to do. But man, all of a sudden you start to figure some stuff out. Like I said, you screw it up and then you start learning how to fix it and you get better at it. So that was a really valuable thing for me to do, is get on the phone. And despite being really uncomfortable or not confident what I was doing. And here's the other kicker. The more knowledgeable and prepared you are, the more confident you're going to sound. Do your prep work before you start talking to people or before you reach out to them. And the more confident, easy it is when you talk to somebody. There's no doubt about that. So yeah, he challenged me to do that. And I'm thankful for it because it made me a better recruiter.
Yeah, good. No, it's true as well. And you're right. Like, it feels so uncomfortable. Like what you described there, been in similar scenarios. And at first it is so uncomfortable, but you do it. Like you said, you develop a kind of, you get in the groove and you work out very quickly what does work and what doesn't. I think having and developing that kind of skill set, I just think just pays dividends later on in life. I can remember looking at some stuff in the US once about successful business people, and the amount of successful business people that had started off in a door-to-door sales job, I was staggered. Like, so many of them.
Yes.
Because you learn these skills that you're talking about now.
And I have to think that's what you were doing. You learn how to deal with rejection pretty fast, because if you got to, let's say, 100 homes and 4 of them were successful, that was probably a pretty good day. Yeah. And you know, I know this is more in sales. If you can't deal with rejection, this is not a job for you. If you are uncomfortable calling people and dealing with people you don't know, this is probably not a good job for you. So you have to have, some people call it thick skin. I just think you have to have enough confidence that what you're doing works. And I think that's harder. I think that's why people get out of recruiting after a couple of years, because they don't believe deep down in their bones that what they're doing works. It has to work a little bit. And then you get much better, much more comfortable hearing no. Because as long as I keep going, I'm going to connect. I'll get the right person. Yeah. And same thing with messaging. Like, I'll be honest, I'm not a great LinkedIn messenger. I try to keep things short, to the point, polite, professional. I'm not going to be whimsical. All right. But I try to, if I can personalize it, I think everybody appreciates when you look at their LinkedIn profile, and sometimes it's where they went to college. And here's another thing to think about, if you're a recruiter listening to this. If someone puts on their LinkedIn profile a cause that they're involved in, like a charity or a non-for-profit, they want the world to know that matters to them. So personalize the message to them with, "I'm a fellow dog lover. I have a job opportunity. Can you talk?" Something along those lines. That matters to them. So personalize it in any way you can, because they wouldn't put that on there unless they want you to know about it. And we could get into the reality of putting too much information on social media, because that's how you get yourself in trouble. But how much can you share with the world to help connect with the rest of the world, but not give away too much?
Yeah, cool. Mike, there's loads there, Mike, and there's loads I can relate there to recruitment, and there's loads I can relate there for people applying for jobs or people. I can relate it to loads of different things. It's like that belief that it works is a massive one, because I think the minute we don't get a quick win or something doesn't happen, I think in this day and age especially, I think we're so quick to go, oh, do you know what? I've tried that. Or I've applied for a job with Mike. I've applied for a job with Tom. And I personalized the message and neither of them replied to it. It doesn't work. People are so quick to, but if you just believe in the process, like, I know if people are applying for a job or if they're trying to get to the next step or whatever they're trying to do, if they do a consistent process of personalizing stuff, believing in the process, if you just stick with it, it might be using the phone, it might be personalized messages, whatever it is, if you do have that belief there, whether it is recruiting or applying for a job, it does work, but it doesn't always come easy. And you've got to, yeah, belief is the key word. You've just got to have that belief. Like, it's like people struggle on the job market at the minute. If they knew that if they personalized 500 messages, they'd go and land an amazing six-figure job, in six figures, whatever it might be, if they knew they were definitely going to do it on that 1,000th personalized message or that 568th personalized message, we'd all do it. It's because because the true belief isn't there. People just want to copy and paste and easy apply and all the rest of it and not take their time and do stuff properly.
And if I could sum it down to one concept, it's productivity. If you're productive, meaning as a recruiter, how many people are you connecting with, whether that's through a messaging or through a phone call? How many times are you screening candidates? Like, my first boss, Chris, challenged me to screen 8 candidates per day. So I looked at it as that's about 1 per hour. And a screen, we'd usually figure it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to screen a candidate. So 8 screens a day sounds daunting early on, but if you start to break that down, 10 minutes out of 60 every hour is not that bad. So you can be more methodical and not hurry through it too much and still be really effective. But if you're not productive and you're not consistently productive, I think that takes plenty. You have to think about it in advance. I'm going to apply to so many jobs and I'm going to set aside, like my wife, for example, she lost her job in the fall of 2023. And so when she can juggle like 1900 things at once, I can barely do 2 things at once. And so she would like to, you got to clean up this part of the house. The laundry's got to get done. I said, honey, for 3 hours, just send out 15 resumes or just apply for 10 or 15 jobs. And that's it. Just focus on that. And then once that's over, and again, that's how my brain works. Her brain works very differently. But it's productivity. It's consistent everyday productivity. And that will lead to results. You just have to be patient enough to make it work, because there are going to be plenty of moments where you go, shit, this isn't working. So I need to do something different. And just when you say that, if you just stay with it a little bit longer, that's when something
happens. Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, you're right, mate. And by the way, I think for people listening, I think everyone can doubt it. I've had it before where we've gone through moments as an agency and I'm like, God, does it still work? Like, we're not getting any new. What's going on? Like, things have quieted. And then all of a sudden you get a flurry and you're busier than ever. But yeah, you're right. And you use the word consistency, and I think consistency, like, is brilliant. It really is. If you could be consistent over a long period of time, I just think that's magic. And the compound effect of that is scary. Whether it's applying for a job in a hyper personalized way, whether it's business development as a recruiter or a salesperson or whatever it might be, whether it's posting on LinkedIn, whatever it is, if you can stay consistent, because it sounds so easy, I'll just do that every day. It's bloody hard, mate, isn't it?
To be honest, it gets boring. It's boring. It does. To do the same kind of things day in and day out for years, you get mentally bored with it. Just go, I don't do this. I did this for 184 straight days. What's the difference if I did it for 185? And I can say this. In coaching, I learned how to be process-oriented, to take the end result out of it. Just take the end result. Because with young athletes, I found that when you take the win, loss, success, failure out of the equation, and you just start talking about all the steps that lead to success or good things or good achievements, whatever, they start thinking more about, I'm going to put in more time. I'm going to lift more weight. I'm going to do 2 more practice sessions a week. That's going to get me closer to being what I want to be. And just take the success, failure, the win, loss, the final score, the stats, whatever, and take that out of the equation. And when you think in terms like just in terms of recruiting, if I'm on the phone a good amount of time, if I'm sending out whatever 100, 200 messages, if your best day is 200 messages, then send 205. If your best day is 300, send 315.
Yeah.
That one more, that 10 more might be the difference between breaking into your next level or you're getting your next job or whatever. And be process oriented. Take the end result out of it. And if at the end of the day, you can say, man, I was about as productive and as dedicated as I could possibly be, then you should be able to sleep pretty well at night. And then the results will come.
Yeah. I love that, mate. I can tell you've been a coach, like just listening to you speak there. Honestly, mate, I can, because it's, and I've said this before on the pod, but one of the benefits of doing this pod, which I didn't realize would be a benefit, but it is, it helps me. Like, yeah. I'm listening to you now and I'm like, so much of what you've just said there, I know it's going to help the listeners because you've just helped me. So it's like, I've been getting annoyed about a few different things we've got going on at work, and we've got a few different things at final, and they should have gone over the line, and they haven't. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Take the end result out of it. Just focus. Not even just obsess over that process and obsessed on refining it and getting better. And yeah, like you say, 300, 315, 2205. Just focus on getting a bit better at that process and everything else will look after itself. So listen, easier said than done, but it's nice to hear you say it, mate, because you're bringing me back on track. Because you do, the minute you start focusing on the end result or what's fair and what's not fair, that's where you go off track, because it doesn't work like that.
No, it's... But let's be real. The world is a cruel and unrelenting place.
It is, mate.
And we can complain about it and we can be victims, or we can, I would rather get determined than discouraged. And that's hard, because it's easy to get discouraged. And I don't blame anybody for getting discouraged or down when you've been searching for a job for 2 or 3 months. Look, I know that's a really rough place to be. Or if you're a recruiter and you have a rec and you can't, the pace of our job is much lower than like an agency. And I spent 7 months, 8 months placing a person in a job a couple years ago when COVID hit. I interviewed him before COVID started, and he waited 8 or 9 months to start because it was with a federal agency. And so we just, on a weekly basis, we had to talk. And luckily, wonderful man, really friendly, had a great upbeat personality. If he was more of a morose, negative, pessimistic person, never would have made it.
Yeah.
But we just stayed with it long enough where it finally came through and he started and he did a great job.
Yeah, you're right, mate. And really, today's world, all we see is the end results. It's all we see is the promotion, or you see it on LinkedIn starting a new position and someone's been promoted to this or doing that. It's great and I love all that, but it moves what you're talking about, which is the process, and it can get us off track. So it's really nice to hear you say that. Also as well, you mentioned about not getting down on a job search. Like, I've seen it a bit and I think this is really important. Like, it's never personal. For me, if a search drops out, if we've done everything we can, it's never personal. There's the world's not against you. It's just this type of thing happens. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen it a little bit on LinkedIn where I'll see little comments on things and I'm like, oh God, you shouldn't have done that. Like, someone's basically getting really annoyed because they've been on the job market for too long, and it's like, oh no, that's out there now, and that's your employee brand. So just be careful. So yeah, I just like what you said there, which was, you basically said, just don't get down about it. Don't take it too personally. You know, no one's trying to upset you.
I can promise anybody who's listening, recruiters are the most unbiased, unprejudiced people in the world. And the reason being is we want to place people in jobs to make more money. Now, that's a very simple explanation, and maybe that's not completely true, but on some level, that's what I'm motivated on. I could care less what background you're in. I could care less where you're from. I could care less what your religion is. A, I'm going to treat you how I'd like to be treated, just because I want to give you a good experience. And if you're the right person for the job, I want to get you into that job. So I could care less about, and I, unfortunately, we've probably all had clients who probably didn't think that way. And so you have to do what's right, because you have a responsibility to them and you have a responsibility to the candidate too, to try to do the right thing. But yes, certainly there's bad actors out there and don't want to open the job to everybody. But trust me, as a recruiter, I, if you're good, I want to find you. I could care less where I have to find you, but I want to find you.
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely. Everyone, as a recruiter, we want the best people. We want them fast, mate. Don't
we don't have agendas. We don't have a bias. We just want to find the best people we can.
No, definitely. But just another point as well, which I thought was really good, which is, you mentioned about, you put that job advert on Monster. I can't remember, you said 60 or 80 resumes, and you and Chris just basically just didn't open your laptops. You rang through them all day. And you mentioned that those calls were hard, but they got a bit easier when decent amount of preparation was involved. And I think this is really relatable as well. Actually, I posted about this yesterday. Some people come on the call and they're just not prepped at all. And I think even 10 minutes, 5 minutes, if you just do 5 minutes, really intense preparation in a room on your own, I think people will be staggered about A, how much information they can absorb and how much they can learn about a company or a person in a yes. short space of time. And also you're miles ahead of everyone else. If you do 5 minutes intense, you're probably in the top 90-95%.
If you're willing to search anybody's LinkedIn profile, if the person who you're interviewing with and the company's listed, you can have a link to it. You can learn as much as you want about them. It's out there. You have to be willing to look and search. And no one expects you to be an expert on them. But if you don't know anything about them, then why is it that you really want to work there other than it's a job opening and they can hire me? Then it's okay for them to question your motivation. So you should, like you said, for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, if you look and have some idea of where's this company in the grand scheme of things or what problems are they dealing with, man, I think that people on the other end of it really appreciate the time and effort you put into it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, if you go in there prepared, it's the same as, you know what it's like, Mike, when you're working a job or talking to a candidate, if you even understand a reasonable amount about what they do, like candidates are like, wow, other recruiters don't do that. And it's true. You can set yourself apart really quickly. And like you said as well a minute ago, you mentioned your confidence levels are up. When you know what you're talking about, people can tell and it comes across.
And I think here's an important distinction. Don't pretend to be an expert when you're not. If you're a novice, just be honest about it. I think... People in, whether they're in cyber or in development or whatever field in IT, I think people like it if you appeal to their vanity. If you feel like they're a strong candidate and you praise them for having a great resume, they're happy to talk about that. They're proud of that. At the same time, I think it's important for us as recruiters to at least have some understanding of the technology we're trying to get in, to at least have a basic, rudimentary conversation. Like, I was lucky enough here recently, I'm looking for someone with an F5 web admin background. And I'm not really familiar with that. So I had to do some digging. And I luckily connected with a man who's been in military intelligence for 15 years. And he gave me a full breakdown on a PowerPoint. So when I talked to other candidates, I knew that it was a software platform and there were different modules and I could understand how they interacted. So I have, at least I'm not an idiot. When I talk to them or whatever, I can message that and have some level of competency. So yes, learn a little bit about it so that at least you can have a basic conversation, but don't be a jerk and pretend like you're an expert when you're clearly not, because people will get tired of that real quick.
They will. And quite the opposite. I find if you say to people, for example, Mike, I'm going to be really honest here, I don't quite the ins and outs of what you do. Do you mind if I lean on your
Absolutely.
Expertise? People love it. People yes. love it when you say that. And like you said, it's a great way to learn, and you can learn so much from candidates. And if people are listening and they're security professionals, you can do that in your world as well. Just asking people if you tap into their years of knowledge. Like, generally speaking, if people have been doing something for a while and they've got good at it and they're passionate about it, they love that. They love
yes, 100%. They will absolutely tell you stuff that you want to learn. If you appeal to that, they will absolutely do it if you ask. I agree.
Yeah. Definitely, mate. Cool. An outgun, hasn't it?
Yes. Again, if we had a tall Guinness with us, this would go even better. So absolutely, it's going fast.
Yeah, the quality of the audio might go down though when we're about 4 or 5 pints in.
But there'd be better stories. It'd be more entertaining.
Yeah, there would. There'd be a few. There'd be all sorts of recruitment stories coming out. More, I'm sure. So, yes. Yeah. but no, cool, Mike. As we come to the end here, I always like to finish up with... just any book or any content out there that doesn't have to be recruitment or security related, but it can be. But anything that's helped you be a better version of yourself or helped your own self-development, any book or podcast or online content that could help listeners, mate?
I would say there are two in particular that I've gotten a lot from. One, when I was 16, I read a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And the stories in it are very outdated. I'm sure there's updated versions, but at the heart of it, you really learn how to put, whether it's a candidate or a client or whatever field you're in or whatever, but putting the other people's needs and wants ahead of your own, making them feel special, personalizing things, just goes a long way in winning people over. letting other people save face in a bad situation, owning a mistake, even if it's not your own. I think that just that helps engender trust and faith in other people. And so that was a great book. And then I'm a fan of a guy, an author named James Clear, who wrote Atomic Habits. And just the importance of just little, like I talk about consistency and productivity. And it's amazing how if you're willing to do something for 5 minutes, that's so much better than just not doing it at all.
Yeah.
So he sends out a newsletter in my email every couple of days, and there's always something valuable, some story or some idea that I'm like, yeah, that sounds, that I need to utilize that. So those are the two that have helped me a lot.
Yeah, mate, they're both phenomenal books. The How to Win Friends and Influence People. What I did is I underlined certain words in that so I could keep I got to the point where I could reread it in about 20-30 minutes because I'd just highlighted all my favorite bits. But and that's the sort of book as well where you go back to it and you just go, oh, do you know what, I've stopped doing that, I've got off track. But talking about communication and people skills and building relationships, like those two, How to Win Friends, that's that all over, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's good.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right then, mate. Yeah, I hope you have a nice, strong finish to the week. Hope you is that a search you're working on now? The one that you just mentioned, that guy, was that from the?
Unfortunately, shortly after I learned all that, they closed the position because somebody got a certification they needed, so they didn't lose their job, and okay. So I didn't have a chance to fill it. I've actually filled the same role before last year, but
okay, cool.
It's nice to know more about it. So no, unfortunately, didn't fill it.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come in handy at some point. But yeah, welcome to the world of recruitment for everyone listening. That's the sort of thing we have to put up with, Mike, isn't it?
Just adapt and don't take it personally. Move on to the next thing.
Exactly. Not the first and it won't be the last. So,
no, not at all. So
there you go. But no, cool. Thank you, mate. And nice to see you, buddy.
It was great talking to you. Thank you very much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, buddy.